Welcome back to the Ryer on YouTube channel. It is the Sunday night after one of the craziest Saturdays we've seen in a while in the Southeastern Conference. And that's saying something because Brent Beard, my partner right here, and myself, we've seen a few things, Brent Beard, and we outlined last week throughout the week here on the program and on some of the other programs here on Ryer on YouTube, the potential. The scenarios with the three road favorites trying to get it done and stay in the mix where the college football playoff was concerned. As it worked out, all three went on the road and all three went home with losses. And the Alabama Crimson Tide, the Ole Miss Rebels, and those Texas A&M Aggies.
In thinking about this throughout the day, it really is remarkable at the strength of this conference. Now, without getting a debate with other conference folks, it to me it's a real indication. See, this is a strength that this is what we talked about for years. The strength of this conference, really. I mean, we know obviously it's in the upper echelon. But the strength of this conference, I've always felt, is in the middle. And I don't think there's any other conference in the nation that has the potential that the SEC does of having a Florida, Auburn, and Oklahoma be able to win at games in November like this league does. And Trav, this is a thought that should send a little bit of shudder through our system. My Lord, what you know, we're going to nine conference games in the next few years. Trav, what how nutty is that going to make what we've got now?
Well, just think about what you said about Oklahoma, Auburn, and Florida being middling programs in the Southeastern Conference. Mm-hmm. All three of those programs have won national championships in the not too distant past. So,
absolutely,
for the sake of maybe comparison, let's say Penn State last Saturday goes on the road, takes on a home underdog, but it's Minnesota. Mm-hmm. That's kind of that middle of the pack team in the Big Ten. That's the other league that the SEC is held up against. It's not even close when you talk about the potential for what we saw Saturday in one league versus another. And it delivered. It started with Florida and Ole Miss early and took you all the way up until bedtime with Auburn and Texas A&M and Alabama and Oklahoma. But as we typically do here on the program, Brent, we'll start and we'll go from start to finish from Saturday. And it was those Ole Miss Rebels on the road at Florida. Florida, I thought, even though it was zip zip at the end of the first quarter, I thought it was key for Florida to survive the early script of Lane Kiffin. So even in a scoreless game after a quarter, to be able to do that and be in one piece and not be down maybe 10, 14 points, I thought that was a win early for Florida. That Florida defense continues to play at a very nice level. Ole Miss is going to rule this game for years to come because the opportunities were there time and time again, especially in the red zone. You had a couple of failures with J.J. Pegues in the Wildcat situation trying to bounce or run off tackle when it looked like it was more there for a 320-pounder between the tackles. But again, give Florida all the credit. Continue to establish themselves as a legitimate program under Billy Napier. DJ Lagway, once again, very effective. Two touchdown passes, 180 yards passing, overcame that early interception. And, you know, I thought Florida, as the game wore on, especially after Trey Harris went out for Ole Miss, that was a big moment in the first half as well. Ole Miss's top wide receiver who scored on the post there in the second quarter. Florida, the more balanced though offense, you know, more capable of doing it both ways with that run game and through the air. So the Florida Gators now bowl eligible at 6-5, feeling very good about themselves right now, and really even more excited where the big picture is concerned, 2025 and beyond.
I'll hit both of them real quick. Trav, I've got a friend who works with the Ole Miss radio network. He texted me after the game, and he said, and this is a quote from him, he said, "That was a soul-crushing loss."
Even by Ole Miss standards, because this is kind of what Ole Miss has always done. But for Ole Miss, for it to be soul-crushing, that it takes it to an even higher level, because they've had their souls crushed a few times.
Now, what many Ole Miss people have said, and it's a really good point, he said, okay, I know we had 464 yards of total offense, but to your point, we were 3-for-14 on third down. We were 2-for-4 on fourth down, and 0-for-3 in the red zone.
Yeah.
So, they abandoned the running game. They didn't use the Ulysses Bentley. And as a matter of fact, Lane had to talk about that.
Yeah, he went with a return specialist to start the game, and then it was Pegues in short yardage. Now, they're without Henry Parrish,
yes,
we knew going into the game.
Correct.
And you want to know where Quinshon Judkins leaving hurts Ole Miss this year?
Yeah.
Going to Ohio State via the transfer portal. This just wasn't a team that really at any point during the year, other than Parrish, felt like it had a legitimate option at the running back position.
Absolutely. Yeah. No question about that. Now, Florida, on the other hand, the two big things that really stack out. Now, Lagway was I don't know if pedestrian is a word, but he was 10 of 17 for 180 and two scores. And that's not what Tom Brady numbers, but the guy is explosive and he makes things happen. And the other guy that's explosive is a guy that you discovered early on. This Jaden Baugh kid had 184 yards.
Yeah.
And the other thing, and I hate they got Aaron Gates got hurt because he was really playing well.
Yeah, that was tough.
But the thing that's really, Trav, to me, that's been impressive, and this goes back to what we talk about every week and every segment, is Florida in two games has 11 sacks. They had 7 against LSU, and they had 4 against Ole Miss, and the hurries that went with that. So can we say for the Gators, in many ways, it was a total team victory?
Oh, it was. And Jackson Dart, he tried to put the cape on, man. He tried to go Superman. Jackson Dart is a guy that you kind of have to chop his head off. You know, he is such a competitor. He still threw for 323.
Yeah.
And a couple of touchdowns. He had the two big interceptions. But again, once Harris went out and Watkins wasn't really himself either, you know, you start getting into Juice Wells. And I thought Juice Wells just wasn't into the game.
Really?
It felt like the South Carolina transfer kind of went into the game, not expecting to be a part of things.
Yeah.
And then once Harris went out, they really needed Juice Wells.
Yes.
And the miscommunications, whatever it was between Jackson Dart and Juice Wells, that proved catastrophic, I thought, in the second half of the game. But again, Florida, just the more rounded, more balanced football team on Saturday on both sides of the ball. And then also in the kicking game, it's a tough one for Ole Miss because, you know, you win that game Saturday and then you see A&M lose, you see Alabama lose.
Yeah,
it really falls into place for you. But now that's not the case. You get the Egg Bowl as a consolation coming up this weekend if you're Ole Miss. And so rough and just a huge win for Billy Napier.
Absolutely.
Not only because it's over another ranked opponent, a top 10 team in Ole Miss, but the guy on the other sideline was the guy a lot of your fan base was pining for just a month ago.
Yes. Oh, yeah. And listen, I'm sure you've thought about this, Trav, the reality of it. I mean, they were in position. They weren't ready yet physically and emotionally and psychologically. But my stars, if they had beaten Tennessee and Georgia, being 20-20 in the fourth quarter, Trav, we'd be having a totally different conversation about Florida right now, wouldn't we?
Really could. No doubt about it. Moving on, Saturday, the Georgia Bulldogs were able to catch their breath following the big win over the Tennessee Vols the previous Saturday. The Dogs hosting UMass, and a little bit of a sluggish start, I guess you could say. Yeah. I didn't have UMass being up 7-0 early in that game at Sanford Stadium. But then, as you might expect, the Bulldogs took control pretty much from that point forward. 28-14 game at the half. You know, still not exactly what you thought it would be, but 31 second half points. Looks like Carson Beck, Brent, really carried over that final two-thirds of the Tennessee game performance. 297 yards for Carson Beck through the air, 4 touchdowns. Nate Frazier getting 20-plus carries. You still are dealing with Trevor Etienne, some of his health issues. I think Arian Smith, even though it's UMass, it's good if you're a Georgia fan to see him go for a buck 10 on just 3 catches, because that's an element you're going to need, especially now that we know the Georgia Bulldogs are going to participate in that SEC championship game coming up in a couple Saturdays.
I think the interesting thing here is Beck is better. He's not perfect, but he's only had one interception in 3 games, the last 3 games. So that is something that's helping him. Trevor, does this little Nate Frazier get better every week?
I like him a lot. I mean, I've been on record with him, the freshman from California. I see some Josh Jacobs in the way he runs the football. He makes mistakes. It seems like, as we've talked about, every Georgia game you watch, you will see Kirby Smart just all up in Nate Frazier at some point. But there's no denying the potential of this guy. And I think there's a very good chance that he's going to be the guy for the most part for this offense in the run game. And at that running back position, as the Dogs look to navigate the SEC championship game and beyond. Some interesting stats for UMass in the game. Had a back go for 107 yards on just 9 carries. But, you know, again, you know, one of those kind of games, you just try to get through against a 1-9 opponent coming in. And then Georgia Tech coming up this weekend, right? That should be a physical affair. Ooh. Georgia Tech, Brent Key. They pride themselves on physicality. Of course, that's Georgia's mantra as well. So there's still a lot on the line, even though Georgia has punched that ticket to Atlanta now for the SEC championship game. Absolutely need to take care of business against the Yellow Jackets in that rivalry matchup.
Trav, if you're in the press conference and you raise your hand to the SID, I'm guessing – it probably would not be wise or prudent to ask Kirby a question about the SEC championship game, would it?
No. Kirby's not going to be. He's not going to be open to those questions this week. Not just yet.
No.
Meanwhile, on Saturday afternoon, you had UTEP coming in from West Texas to take on the Tennessee Vols at Neyland Stadium. Nico Iamalava throws for 209 and 4 touchdowns. Dylan Sampson with a rushing touchdown for an 11th straight game. Each of the 11 regular season games this season, the Tennessee running back has found the end zone. Brew McCoy with a couple of touchdown catches. So about what you would expect, a game Tennessee needed at that point of the schedule coming off that Georgia loss. And again, brighter skies in Knoxville when you wake up Sunday morning after you see the results of Ole Miss, Texas A&M, and Alabama.
By the way, Brew McCoy, who had surgery, had a couple of touchdown catches, which he is kind of rounded in shape. The thing that got my attention is James Pierce had 2 more sacks, and the Vol defense – only 15 tackles for loss, Trav.
Oof. Going to need those coming up with Diego.
Yep.
And the Doors in Nashville coming up this weekend. I think Tennessee's going to get Vanderbilt at the right time, though.
Vanderbilt
late in the season. We'll talk about the Commodores more coming up in just a little bit. I'd rather see Diego in late November than, say, when Alabama saw him about a month into the season.
Right.
A little different deal, a little different team. But Tennessee now at 9-2, 5-2 in the league, and a look to close it out with a rivalry win over Vanderbilt coming up this weekend. Mid-afternoon, get into that 3:30, 4 o'clock window Eastern on Saturday, Brent. Kentucky traveling to Austin, Texas. Boy, that was a game I tried to stay engaged with. It was tough to watch. It really was not really good football, really, from either team. Texas looked like after pretty much the first quarter, there wasn't a whole lot of interest. I guess the first quarter and a half or so. Not a bad first half for Texas. The Longhorns led 24-7 at the break, but didn't really have that finishing kick, I'm sure, that Steve Sarkisian would like to see more of. I'll say this for Kentucky. I would just roll with Cutter Bowley at this point.
No doubt. No doubt.
Brock Vandergriff, I've said it before, the Georgia transfer. He's a guy I want on my team, but I probably want him more as a second-team quarterback than I do as a starter in the SEC. I see some things from Bowley that I want to see some more of because I need to evaluate that position to see, hey, am I going portal again?
Really?
At quarterback for 2025 if I'm Mark Stoops? Or am I going to roll with Cutter Bowley? And I thought he showed some decent things. But Quinn Ewers throws for a 191 and a couple of touchdowns. Quintrevion Weisner for Texas with a big game on the ground. He has kind of been a revelation as this season has moved along, especially after the injuries back in the preseason before Texas even got things cranked up. Matthew Golden, 7 catches for 86 yards for the Longhorns. I guess the big news, though, Brent, Quinn Ewers not exactly healthy coming out of this game. Sounds like that ankle's an issue, and we might learn some more about that situation for the Longhorns as they get ready for A&M on the road next Saturday night.
Trev, help me on this, but they're doing some kind of procedure on him.
Scan. I thought they were going to scan it or MRI it, but, hey, if it's – you know, a high ankle sprain, I guess it could be the tightrope.
Yeah.
But if he gets the tightrope done, he's not playing Saturday.
No, absolutely not.
It's Arch Manning up if it's something along the lines of tightrope. So
I think they were still kind of trying to decide that, but the press clipping went something like, he's going to have a procedure, but he won't keep him out of the game. But the point is, we'll watch that closely. The thing I wanted to bring up with Kentucky, which I know this is disappointing for them, and by the way, good call on the Bowley kid, 10 of 18 for 160.
Yeah.
And again, Brock Vandergriff, it just really has not worked. Really peaked during the Georgia game. And then really haven't been able to do much since then.
Ole Miss, yeah.
But when I'm curious about your reaction to is Kentucky now 1-7 in the conference, the worst mark since 2013, and Trevor, the first time since 2015, Kentucky will not be going bowling. So
a long streak comes to an end under Mark Stoops, and boy, you think about it. Kentucky doesn't win at Ole Miss. They're right there with Mississippi State as an 0-8 team.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, a team that doesn't get a league win in 2024. And you get Louisville coming up this weekend. Louisville, very impressive over on Saturday against Pitt.
Yes.
They're in a home game. So rivalry matchup for Kentucky, and that's it. I mean, that's the bowl season for Kentucky coming up this week, with the rival Cards set to visit Kroger Field, Texas. Again, we'll see with Quinn Ewers and how that kind of plays out. The benefit, the luxury that Texas has is that defensively they continue to play at a very, very high level.
Yes. So,
and that travels well.
It sure does.
Take that on the road to A&M and feel a lot better about the situation, regardless of who your quarterback might be for the Longhorns. Also, in that mid-afternoon window, Brent, the Arkansas Razorbacks become bowl eligible. We had kind of circled this game for a while because that schedule was so tough. Ole Miss, Texas, that run, go to Missouri this week. And this game sat out there kind of like an oasis for Sam Pittman with 5 wins. And could they get the 6? But it's still interesting to me how different the narratives are around a couple of 6-5 programs these days, like Florida 6-5. But boy, you almost get the sense from that fan base that they're getting ready for the college football playoff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because of the way this thing is unfolded, especially with the promise of DJ Lagway, and not just Lagway, but some other very, very promising young players like Ball and others, and some guys on the defensive side. Arkansas knocks off Louisiana Tech 35-14 Saturday to become bowl eligible. But boy, to hear some Arkansas fans, it is still not close to good enough. It was not pretty, the win for Arkansas. Talen Green throws for 221, a couple of touchdowns. He's picked once. Rashad DeBinion runs for a buck 12. We talked about Andrew Armstrong at the wide receiver position all year long. But just again, how a couple of 6-5 records are perceived differently when you talk about Florida and this Arkansas team.
Oh, yeah. No question. Now, they weren't real happy in that first quarter, Trav, because Arkansas only got 25 offensive yards. And then in the second quarter, got about 225. What I wanted to concentrate on here, their defense, frankly, has been impressive during a few games this year. Mm-hmm. Second straight, Travis Williams has really done a nice job with that. They held Louisiana Tech to 43 yards and 0 points in the first half. Now, you've mentioned him before, Travis Williams. I'm not going to say he's a star, but I mean, I will say that name is kind of getting a little more respect around the league now, isn't it?
Yeah, I think if nothing else, what you can say is that Arkansas this season has been coordinated well, both with Bobby Petrino and Travis Williams. So give Sam Pittman some credit for that. You know, I think one game too can really change the outlook for a team. And it wasn't an SEC game. Yeah, I go back to Oklahoma State. Yeah. You know, that was a game Arkansas could have won 7 different ways and didn't win on the road back in September. And if you win that game at 7-4, you know, you're kind of looking at things probably a little bit differently. At the time, my concern was, that was the kind of loss that would keep Arkansas from bowl eligibility. Well, they still got there, but again, not a happy fan base, best I can tell. But it looks like Sam Pittman now with bowl eligibility should be safe. And who knows? Maybe they go. Mm-hmm. Maybe they go to Missouri this weekend. And at least I think that could be a very competitive game.
Absolutely.
I'm not to the point of feeling comfortable of picking Arkansas in that game, because Brady Cook looks like he's good to go once again. Nate Noel for Missouri. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about the Tigers coming up here in just a little bit in relation to their trip to Mississippi State. But first, South Carolina gets to 8 wins. The 18th-ranked Gamecocks take care of FCS foe Wofford, 56-12. That was a 21-9 game at the half, but 35 second-half points for South Carolina. More than does the trick. Lenore Sellers throws for 300-plus, very efficient through the air, proficient through the air again this week, 3 touchdown passes. Rocket Sanders, 15 carries, 72 yards. And here's South Carolina now with a chance still to win 10 games under Shane Beamer. Get Clemson this week. That obviously will be a highlighted matchup on a rivalry weekend in college football. And then see how the bowl situation plays out. South Carolina, if nothing else, has sort of played their way up the pecking order.
They have.
It seems like in the state of Florida, right?
Yes.
You know, instead of maybe Jacksonville, maybe South Carolina is looking at Tampa or maybe even Orlando, or at least being in a position where they can have some say if it comes down to Tampa and Jacksonville. They can say, hey, we'd rather go to Tampa. We'd rather go to Jacksonville, because that's how those games in the pecking order can kind of play out.
Oh, yeah. No, that and listen, if the Gator Bowl, which is close to us, if they got in South Carolina or particularly Florida, that'd be a pretty that'd be a pretty excited group. I tell you another thing about South Carolina, and what we're going to hear this week, South Carolina themselves, they weren't that far from the playoff either, were they?
No, they really weren't. you know, you think about that LSU game in Columbia. Mm-hmm. Oof.
The Alabama game in Tuscaloosa.
Good road team this season was South Carolina. So the Gamecocks feeling really good about themselves heading into that clash with Dabo Swinney and the Clemson Tigers this weekend. Also on Saturday, getting into primetime, the Missouri Tigers, 39-20 winners over the Mississippi State Bulldogs. Again, Brent, looks like Mississippi State right there on the precipice of a winless season in Southeastern Conference play under first-year coach Jeff Lebby. You know, you think about big threes in this league, and it goes from quarterback to running back to wide receiver. And Missouri showed up pretty well, talking about Brady Cook, Nate Noel, and then, of course, Luther Burden, who also gets a good bit of help from Theo Weiss.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that listen, that's still a lethal offense a lot of ways. And that Arkansas-Missouri game, that's, again, a bowl pecking order type of game for Missouri. I'm still going to be interested to see after the season's over if Eli Drinkwith is flirting a little bit more, Trav, as
you've been kind of hinting around about that. You think that Eli could be on the move, maybe?
Yeah, I'll be very curious where that where that situation goes. Look, I don't know without prolonging this as far as about Missouri. Listen, Brady Cook, I have a lot of respect for Cook, Trav. I mean, this guy, he could lose a limb and still be on the field. I give him a lot of credit for attitude and the toughness and things of that nature. I hope Cook will be, and I think he will, and Missouri history will be well thought of for years to come.
Yeah, he shouldn't have to buy many drinks.
No.
Down the road should Brady Cook. And this is a guy that really going into last season, there was a lot of consternation about could he be the guy? Would he be the guy? Huge year last year with 11 wins for the Missouri Tigers. Already got 8 more. So he's got 19 wins in the last 2 seasons, looking at very likely finishing with 20 over the last 2 seasons. And for Mississippi State, it's just kind of more of the same, unfortunately.
Right.
The Bulldogs, Michael Van Buren, the true freshman quarterback, throws for 191 and a touchdown. Davon Booth with 12 carries for 124 yards for a score for Mississippi State. Some of that leads me to wonder if Arkansas, you know, could have some success on the ground, maybe against this Missouri defense coming up this weekend in Como. Also in those primetime hours, just a good old-fashioned blocking and tackling exhibition put on by the once proud and proud again after Saturday night, Oklahoma Sooners. Oklahoma, there was beauty in the simplicity, I would say, Brent, because the Sooners kept it mostly about 3 or 4 plays on offense and then just locked up Alabama on the offensive side of the ball. Jalen Milroe intercepted 3 times in the game. Jamarian Miller, 12 carries for 45 yards. And it was physicality. It was fundamentals. And it was simple in a lot of ways, but give Oklahoma a lot of credit. They didn't overthink it. They did their due diligence, I thought, especially on the offensive side of the ball. You could see the influence of Vandy and what it was able to accomplish against Alabama offensively earlier in the season. You saw Oklahoma take some of that formationally and even with some shovel pass and just some things to challenge the fundamental soundness of this Alabama defense and whether it was conceptually not effective from defensive coordinator Kane Womack, or it was just busted assignments. It was a failure fundamentally for Alabama, not just defensively, but offensively as well, because it felt like Nick Sheridan and Kalen DeBoer just basically looked at it and said, you know what? Boy, that LSU game plan was great.
Yeah.
And it worked great against LSU.
Yeah.
Let's try that against a much better front seven and a much better coached and coordinated right now anyway think Blake Baker will be fine at LSU in time. But right now, Brent Venables got that thing, that area, that team he's got playing at a high level. Now, we can debate the rest of that program right now under Brent Venables. Yeah. But as a defensive guy, you know he's going to have the linebacker level. He's going to have the front seven tied in and dialed in, and that was the case Saturday night.
Well, listen, it was a clinic in a lot of ways. Frankly, I mean, Jackson Arnold, the quarterback, runs for 131 yards. Eight of his 25 attempts moved the chains. Yeah. Which is just amazing. Then Xavier Robinson ran for 107. I mean, they ran for 257.
And over 200 in the first half.
Absolutely. Yeah. And look, you and the final two half possessions, Trav, 11 plays, and then 12 plays.
Just took the clock.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. But
And I know you look at it statistically in the second half, you say, boy, Alabama did a better job. Well, they really didn't.
No,
because they didn't. Oklahoma accomplished what Oklahoma wanted to accomplish in the second half. They shrunk the game and basically took the game, took the clock. And so, yeah, I think, you know, for Oklahoma, absolutely give Jackson Arnold a lot of credit. This is a guy that after being benched earlier in the season could have packed it in. He didn't do that. You know, I'm sure this isn't the kind of offense he signed up for as a former five-star, but this is what Oklahoma needed to do to win the game. And Jackson Arnold apparently fully embraced that. They don't have enough at the wide receiver position. So even if you wanted to throw it around, you really can't right now. And look, Oklahoma left some meat on the bone too. I mean, they had a double pass there in the first half where – you know, the second pass is just in the field of play. It's a touchdown. That's how wide open it was. And yes, Alabama had some opportunities go by the board, lost a touchdown catch for Ryan Williams on a blown call on an illegal touching flag by the officiating crew. But, you know, I think that would have made it a 24-10 game there in the second half. I guess you could argue, well, that may have swung momentum, but I didn't get that sense. And the reason why I didn't is the stats you gave about Oklahoma's offense there in the second half, how they just held on to the football. It's not like Alabama defensively could get off the field in three plays either. And, you know, the game finishes with Oklahoma averaging on first down, Oklahoma averaged 7 yards per play on first down plays.
So
they convert about 50% of their thirds, but they only had like 4 yards to go on average on third downs. Alabama, on the other hand, because they got handled so much on early downs, Alabama's average third down was 11.7 yards to convert.
Wow.
And so for Alabama to actually convert 50% of those, that's pretty damn good. But yeah, it wasn't going to happen with Jalen Milroe as kind of the primary runner against that Oklahoma defense. And, you know, Oklahoma turned it into kind of an inside drill into a test of physicality and also mental toughness. And it was Oklahoma that answered all those questions Saturday night. And damn sure wasn't Alabama.
No. Well, yeah, absolutely. Before I say something about Alabama briefly, Trav, I want somebody to tell me that there are, what, 2, 3, 5 linebackers in the league better than Stutzman.
Well, that whole linebacker level, though, for Oklahoma is really good.
It really is. It's amazing.
As we hear from Beano here in the show comments, and as always, if you want to jump in, you're more than welcome to do so. Beano says, we got beat by – he's an Alabama fan, or she is. We got beat by 3 TDs by a team that threw for 68 yards. Yes. Yeah. Yes, you did, Beano, because you know what? The game is still largely about blocking and tackling.
Yes.
And Saturday night was a great reminder of that. You can draw it up. You can dial it up. All that's great. If you can't block and tackle to the same standard as your opponent, you will still lose in 2024.
Well, and I'll be succinct about this, but Bama was not ready to play. I think they took them lightly. I don't know what they did last week, but I'm not sure how much preparation they did for Oklahoma. And look, probably in fairness, I mean, you and I went over this, My stars, Oklahoma only averages 14 points a game, which is just
– You look at offensive statistics for Oklahoma in the Southeastern Conference,
yeah,
and especially in SEC play.
Yes.
They are 14th or worst,
yeah,
in pretty much every stat.
Oh, yeah. And
they exceeded those numbers by a good bit. So, yeah, I think it's very fair after – Alabama's second loss this season to a five-loss team. Think about that.
Yeah,
really. You have to go back to 2007 to find the last time Alabama, I think, lost to a team that was probably more than four losses or four or more losses. Alabama's lost two games this season to 2 5-loss teams.
That's amazing.
In Vanderbilt, really, and Oklahoma. You know, it's everything is right back into the middle of the table. It had kind of been moved out of the middle of the table after the Tennessee loss because it looked like things were improving in Tuscaloosa. That was a crash and burn performance for Alabama, really, in every phase.
It was
the game Saturday night. And I don't want to devalue the effort of Oklahoma because it was, again, it was beautiful in its simplicity.
It was.
And it was retro in some ways. Mm-hmm. But, boy, and here's the crazy thing about it all. When the college football playoff rankings come out this week, Alabama's probably going to still be just outside
the
field. So we kind of thought this past Saturday could be crazy. Mm-hmm. Well, this Saturday could be crazy. We're talking about Alabama potentially somehow with 3 losses and a 2-3, I guess, on the road when you include Wisconsin. But 1-3 in the SEC in road games and could still somehow maybe find their way back into the mix of this thing.
Well, they would certainly need some help. Two things real quick. One is, I'm not saying bench Milroe, but I do think there have been some times this year to where you take him out, let him see the field, let him rest a few minutes, and see what Ty Simpson can do. It may not have been much better, but
the slide tackle attempt on the pick six for me would have been enough to give Ty Simpson a series. Not that I would have stayed with Ty Simpson, but kind of just a reset.
Yeah,
because if Jalen's of the mindset that was an acceptable effort.
Yeah,
as not only the starting quarterback but a captain of the football team.
Yes,
then he needs a little time to consider that.
He does. Yes.
You know, that was disappointing. Now, sometimes when you're on the field level, you're not as aware of that, right? If you're Kalen DeBoer. So he may not even have known it, but that was disappointing too. RTR Mimi, a Alabama fan checking in, Brent, asking if we have an update on injuries for the Alabama players. The Deontay Lawson injury was tough. Because of what he means for the Alabama defense at that middle linebacker position. But, you know, you just hate to see that for a guy who's winding down his career, still has quality football to play. Now, we don't know. I don't know anything more.
I don't either.
Brent, we heard from Kalen DeBoer post-game, just said lower extremity. It didn't look good. It didn't sound good.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully, it won't be as severe as it looked or sounded like. And you got Auburn coming up this week too. And Auburn, that we're going to talk about here in just a minute, feeling really good about itself. And in terms of matching up with Alabama, said this on Aftermath following the game, the Alabama game last night here on the channel. If you're Auburn, you're thinking, you know what? We can do a lot of the same things that that Oklahoma did and Vanderbilt did. You know, we can do some of this stuff.
Oh, yeah. Well, and some of that stuff would be how many times would Jarquez Hunter get the ball?
Yeah. And he's put some numbers up against Alabama in the past too.
Oh yeah, yeah. But look, and I listened to a lot of your Aftermath, and your point was a very good one. And I mean, Oklahoma basically did what Vanderbilt did. It worked, and certainly Auburn is going to try that same thing. So, you know, I'm just wondering. I mean, Trapp, these coaches are smart. They've got to know that. So how do you deal with that?
That was an indictment, though, last night of the Alabama coaching staff.
Yes, yes.
Because you can't live in a vacuum of we're going to do what we do.
Yeah.
And we'll just see what
they do. This league,
you've got to understand, if there's things that work against you, everybody's going to pick up on that.
Yeah.
And even without the Vanderbilt influence, okay, Oklahoma had put on tape for a few games now that there was going to be more quarterback runs for Jackson Arnold. Last night wasn't this sort of surprise attack with Jackson Arnold on quarterback runs. Mm-hmm. They had been doing this.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe conceptually and scheme-wise, Kane Womack had it right, and the execution just was blown. But it just it was not good. And again, boy, you know, Oklahoma just was patient, stuck with their plan. Their guys bought into it. And I hear you, Oklahoma's coming off a bye week. Okay. Alabama just played Mercer, though.
Yeah.
So don't at me with the bye week thing.
Right.
Yeah, Oklahoma. Really. Alabama just played Mercer.
Yeah. You
know, it wasn't like Alabama just played A&M or Texas on the road and had to go to Norman now. So yeah, that's, but yeah, Mimi, we'll know more, I'm sure, on Monday. Caleb Moore will be addressing the media. Hope it's not as bad for Deontay Lawson as it looked or sounded, but you know, you do have a capable replacement. He's not Deontay. Justin Jefferson can jump in there. You miss the leadership. You miss the orchestration of the defense that you get from Deontay probably as much as anything else. But, well, I'll say this too. The difference in the linebacker play was light years. And some of that goes back to Oklahoma made it uncomfortable for Alabama.
Yeah, yes.
On both sides of the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Taking away Jalen as a runner, that makes Alabama uncomfortable, obviously. Makes Jalen uncomfortable, I think. Mm-hmm. And then conversely, being able to line up and kind of smash that Alabama front seven, that's not what Jahad Campbell and Deontay Lawson like to deal with. They don't like defensive tackles in their laps.
No.
You know, they don't like offensive guards up in their face all night or centers. You know, they like to run and make plays. And Oklahoma made sure that did not happen in that 24-3 win over the Alabama Crimson Tide. Brent, let's talk about Texas A&M at Auburn. The third of the trifecta that we underscored last week as far as road favorites in contention for CFP spots, potentially going into some dangerous situations. Texas A&M, I'll say this for the Aggies, after falling behind 14-0 there in the first quarter.
Right.
And they did this against South Carolina too. Mm-hmm. And that's something they're going to have to kind of be introspective about, because you can't get in these holes on the road in the Southeastern Conference. But I'll say this for Mike Elko's team. In both instances, I saw some chin for Texas A&M to dig out of those holes and really put themselves in a position where they're thinking today, we should have won that game last night.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. Yeah, I agree with that totally. And for the second straight SEC road game, as you mentioned, road games, the Aggie beat writers have told us that they were not ready to match that intensity of another unranked opponent. I thought this was interesting, and this is something you mentioned a few months ago. The beat writers also told us that when Moss, the running back, went out, he gave them a physicality on offense, Trav, that they don't have right now.
No, Daniels is dynamic, but he's not a Jaden Ball type.
No.
Or no. Montrell Johnson type. Or a guy that can really kind of soften defenses up between the tackles. And then you complement him with Amari Daniels. Now A&M is in that position of more of its complementary back having to take on 27 carries against Auburn on Saturday night, which is what Amari Daniels did for the Aggies.
Yeah, they disappointing to say the least. Now they can make up a lot of ground if they're able to beat Texas.
Yeah, they're still in it. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. But just a very difficult loss. Even Nick Saban said over the weekend, talking about playing in Jordan-Hare that it was haunted. So he got a lot of play out of that, to say the least. But Trav, did we think we'd see a 300-yard passing night from one Peyton Thorne, by the way? We mentioned Jarquez Hunter and the guy you talked about before. This Keandre Lambert-Smith and also Cam Coleman, we knew they would have to go back to these guys and get them into the game a lot more than they have, and they've certainly done that.
Yeah, it was kind of carryover from Louisiana Monroe, and you wondered if that would be the case for the Auburn offense, and you got similar stat lines from Peyton Thorne and Jarquez Hunter and Cam Coleman. When you look at those three guys specifically, I give Marcel Reed a lot of credit too. Mm-hmm. It was a very shaky start for A&M. But I thought a big play later in kind of regulation, you had what, a shotgun snap just kind of went off his hands a loss. And, you know, Noah Thomas delivered at the wide receiver position. Certainly for A&M, 5 catches, 124, a couple of touchdowns. But you know what? A&M still controls its destiny.
They sure do.
Because you beat Texas, that gets you to Atlanta. And then if you win in Atlanta, you're in regardless.
Yeah, sure are.
So, you know, that is the one thing I know Mike Elko probably has been preaching since the locker room after a really gut-wrenching loss, though. Yeah. So that's a tough one when you have to face a Texas team. Of course, Texas, though, questions at the quarterback position with Quinn Ewers playing at home as A&M. As we learned once again on Saturday, every week in this league is like an entirely different season.
It really is.
It's not like a different week. Some weeks it feels like it's not even the same season, and this week was certainly one of those. And Auburn looking to cap the regular season with a 3-game winning streak that would get them to bowl eligibility. And Brent, Tuscaloosa hasn't been very kind to the Auburn Tigers.
No.
Beyond really 2010 with the comeback game. And even in that game, they got jumped. It was like 24-3 before coming back to win in Tuscaloosa. Otherwise, that game in Tuscaloosa has been very heavily in favor of the Crimson Tide. It hasn't been like the games at Jordan-Hare when Auburn is hosting and had the thrillers and the historic type of performances and moments in those Iron Bowls. So Auburn, though, feeling a lot better about itself than it did just a couple weeks ago. And we'll see. You know, that's going to be a mid-afternoon kickoff in Tuscaloosa. I think it's prime time, right, for Texas, yes. Texas A&M and College Station?
Oh, yes.
Next Saturday night? Boy.
Yeah, hey, I know you'll be on this, but Trav, how excited is that ticket man, by the way, for that Texas A&M game?
A lot more excited that, you know, it was huge anyway. It's historic because they haven't played.
Yeah.
So it's a reunion of rivals that we haven't seen in too long of a time. He's a lot happier than the Tuscaloosa ticket man.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Because the Tuscaloosa ticket man now has a sort of downtrodden fan base for the game of Tuscaloosa. And there was a potential for Alabama to host a college football playoff game. So the Tuscaloosa ticket man loses out on the Iron Bowl and then loses out on a potential playoff game.
Yes.
In Tuscaloosa. Yes. So, yeah, the College Station ticket man in a little better place, I think, this week than the one in Tuscaloosa. Let's wrap things up from Saturday, Brent, with the Vanderbilt Commodores traveling to Baton Rouge. There was some intrigue about this game because, as much as anything, you just didn't know the headspace of this LSU team after that disappointing performance against the Florida Gators on the road. But give LSU credit, pull it together enough to knock off those pesky Vanderbilt Commodores 24-17. Not to be hyperbolic or anything, but how much did Brian Kelly need that win Saturday night?
Oh, and
now he gets Oklahoma coming into Baton Rouge this weekend. Suddenly there's a lot more interest in that game because, you know, Oklahoma is sort of found this approach against really Ole Miss and other teams, Alabama most recently, where, hey, you talk about taking from what other teams have done to beat teams. Now Oklahoma may take some from Alabama, thinking about what the Crimson Tide was able to do with LSU and Jackson Arnold on the ground. I think if you're Oklahoma, you can take a lot of what you were offensively against Alabama and apply it to this LSU defense. Although, again, Diego Pavia, that kind of quarterback. Diego, though, not dynamic, not a guy that's going to hit you for the big yards per carry, although he did average about 7 a carry against LSU Saturday night. But in the end, Garrett Nussmeier, Josh Williams, Kyron Lacy, they get it done.
Yeah, they sure did. The only 2 false start penalties for the offensive line, 1 negative run attempt, Garrett Nussmeier, 332 yards. I mean, when he gets protection, he's still a good quarterback. Josh Williams had one of those rare games for the Tiger running backs, 151 yards. He certainly helped them. And C.J. Daniels and Aaron Anderson, who we both really like, that they helped LSU not have a 4-game losing streak for the first time since 1999.
Oof. Yeah, that's when you start getting into some Jerry DiNardo.
Yeah, you sure do.
You start feeling like, is Brian Kelly more Jerry DiNardo than Nick Saban, maybe?
Yeah.
You know, if you drop 4 straight, especially at this time of the season. So, big win for LSU again, who will now take on Oklahoma to cap the regular season. And again, some of this bowl pecking order stuff in play.
It is.
For some of these teams in that 7-8, maybe even 9 win window. When you think about how that's going to play out in the league, Vanderbilt going to head back to Nashville, host the Tennessee Volunteers. We'll see what Vandy can do in terms of putting up some resistance. Now, for a Tennessee team that's kind of in the situation that Ole Miss was in last week, Alabama was in last week, Texas A&M was in last week, and those 3 teams didn't handle it all that well. No. So, that'll be interesting to watch coming up. And we'll preview these games for the upcoming weekend more here on the channel in the coming days. But for now, Brent, that is a rundown from a crazy, crazy Saturday in the league where it just means more.
That's right. I'll say this. ESPN did one of their analytics things. And look, this is the reason they got the playoff. They said there are still 24 teams that have an outside chance at making the playoffs. So what at that? And when you hear numbers like that, and the interest that you've got, I mean, you know, here's Boise State's 11, Clemson's 12, Bama's 13, South Carolina 14, and Arizona State 15, and you've got, you know, it stretches out for a while, but and again. And we're not done with 12 yet, and then we're talking about 14 to 16. So 24 teams, and we talked about that in the beginning of the season of how the interest would go, and I think it's accomplished what they wanted.
Yeah, I think so. And I think the dollar signs are going to be even more confirmation of that. You know, you can hear the cash registers going off.
No question.
In the heads of those involved. Brent, as always, a lot of fun, my friend. Anything else before we get out of here?
I think that will do it. We want to wish everybody a happy Thanksgiving. Travis and I will be back, and we'll figure out timing for this week.
Might be over turkey and cranberry. We might do a dinner table program, maybe.
But Trav, I've got to ask before we go, a Pops report, is he turned away from Gunsmoke maybe to watch his Gators a little bit more right now?
I got to check in with him, you know, because it wasn't that long ago he wasn't even watching the Gators.
No, he didn't want anything to do with them.
Maybe he may be back in the saddle. I'll have to check with him and see about that. But he may be back. He may be back. We'll see him Thursday. That's always an interesting get-together when you get all those Ryers together.
Sure it is.
Thanksgiving, and we're going to have a pretty full roster this year. So,
oh, wow.
Good. Who knows?
Good. I'm sure there'll be a few opinions at that
table. We should go live on YouTube with Thanksgiving at the Ryers. We might actually draw some viewers with that.
I think that might be true.
Yeah. All right. Well, Brent, look forward to it coming up this week right here on Ryer on YouTube. If you haven't subscribed to our channel as of yet, we certainly encourage you to do so. Hit that subscribe button right now. There's a notification bell there as well. If you hit that notification bell, click on the notification bell, you'll be alerted to all of our content as it drops right here on Ryer on YouTube. And of course, we always appreciate a thumbs up, a like helps us out tremendously too. For Brent Beard, Travis Ryer, thanking you once again. If you're headed out and traveling in the next few days, please be safe. And we'll talk to you next time right here on Ryer on YouTube.